Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
The NFL draft, of course, which is Thursday right here, 7 o'clock on 98.7. And the Last Dance, parts 1 and 2 of 10. Now, before we get to the calls into this Jamal Adams, I guess it's news or a strong opinion from Peter King, we want to remind you can listen to us anywhere you go. Click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. Would you like me to read what Peter King put in his Football Morning in America, or would you like to take a call or two here?
No, let's get the bad news out of the way. Let's read okay. And you can brighten
all
up
right.
With some calls.
I was trying to save you from this, but you asked for it. Okay, here we go. This is Peter King. This is what he wrote. This came out this morning. I think I get the sense that Jamal Adams does want to leave the Jets, and his long-term future will be ugly and drawn out, unless the Jets quickly really overpay him. It's just another reason why first-year GM Joe Douglas deserved the 6-year contract he got from the organization. He's used to working in places where players are eager to play, Baltimore and Philadelphia. The Jets might become one of those places, but they've got to win some games first. So that's not exactly optimistic news on Jamal Adams.
No, it isn't. And, I mean, it's going to be something that Joe Douglas needs to figure out sooner rather than later. I mean, yes, with Jamal's agent, Jamal, whoever he needs to talk to and speak to, figure out what Jamal wants, what's going to make him happy, and if that's not a number he wants to approach, or if, you know, Adam Gase and Joe Douglas don't feel like paying a safety that much money is something that they want to do, then it's in the Jets' best interest to decide that now and then make a move one way or the other leading into the draft on Thursday.
Well, Rick, if you connect the dots, it feels like Joe Douglas is laying the groundwork for that to happen, because I told you guys on Friday that Jamal and his agent Kevin Connor didn't leak the fact that he would be absent from the virtual offseason. So if it didn't come from their camp, then it has to come from the Jets organization. And the only reason why they would put that out there a week ahead of the draft is to justify a decision to move on from Jamal if they do, in fact, get a deal on Thursday night that makes sense to them. We won't probably know anything until the draft gets here. But, I mean, this is one of those situations. If you know you're not going to pay him $15, $16 million a year, you might as well move on from him sooner rather than later so he doesn't come a disruption for your head coach that's going into a pivotal year.
And there's so much information now, and I forget where I got this. I think it was Samini, but I'm not 100% sure over the weekend. He said that he does not expect the Jets to pay Jamal Adams right now. Like, even if they keep him and don't trade him by Thursday, he doesn't expect them to get a new deal with him prior to the start of the season. I don't, if that's the case, if you don't plan to pay him right away, I don't think it ends well between these two sides.
No, I don't think it ends well either. And I think the other problem with what Rich just said, and that I think it was Rich Smith that said that, but by not paying him, you're not taking full advantage of what Jamal Adams can potentially bring to the table. I mean, part of the reason why New York Jets fans love Jamal Adams is because of the leadership aspect of it. Like, he's one of the vocal leaders. Like, he's the heartbeat of the New York Jets. So in order to get the best out of Jamal, you're going to want a happy Jamal. And Jamal feels like he's outperformed his contract and he should be paid. Like, he doesn't like the head coach. I can promise you that. He does not like the head coach. So all of a sudden now, you decide, you know what? We don't care what he wants. We're going to keep him. We're not going to pay him. We'll make him play this fourth year out. Then you're not going to get the best out of Jamal Adams. He'll show up and play, but he's not going to give you everything else you need from your best player as far as the leadership part of it is concerned.
I guess the part that would be, or should be, most alarming for Jets fans is the fact that, yeah, Jamal Adams doesn't like your head coach, but none of the star players that have been under Adam Gase in his 4 years as being a head coach in the NFL like him. That's a problem. When you're trying to figure out whether or not you got a head coach, the fact that he can't forge good relationships with the star players, the most influential guys in the locker room, that's a problem in terms of program building and trying to get this team, this organization, in position where they can consistently be competitive. If you can't get Adam Gase to get along with the players and being able to have good relationships in the building, then I think you got a bigger problem on your hands if you're the New York Jets.
Well, I think especially in a salary cap sport too, right? Like, you know, no one's asking these players to take hometown discounts. You get what you deserve, but I mean, if you want a player you know, to want to be a part of your program, to be, you know, a little bit flexible in his demands, then that player's got to trust what you're doing. And you got to give the player the opportunity to win consistently and to, you know, to receive the kind of accolades that that player feels like he deserves to receive. And I don't think the Jets right now are giving Jamal Adams those two things. So why is he going to bend over backwards to try to give you any kind of deal or any kind or work with you? He's going to hold you over the barrel. This is what I want. And if you can't pay me,
yep,
then trade me somewhere where I can win and I'm going to get paid too.
So gut feeling right now on Monday, Chris, Jamal Adams is here come Friday morning.
Yeah, I think he's here.
You do? You think they keep him?
Yep.
Rick?
Right now, my gut tells me that they're probably going to trade him. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling that as well.
I don't think they can justify paying a safety that much money. I think for Adam Gase, I think, and this is I'm not defending this. I'm just this the reality of it. It's not in Adam Gase's best interest to have a disgruntled Jamal Adams in his locker room. It's not.
No, not at all. I don't think it's in your best interest to have a disgruntled anybody, especially him, because he's such a leader of this team. If he's unhappy, he feels like the guy that would make other people unhappy.
Yeah, but here's what I don't get about it, though. It's almost as if the Jets are ruining their own leverage with this situation, because when you put this type of information out, the fact that everybody knows Jamal wants a contract extension and they know that Joe Douglas and Adam Gase are resistant to giving him one, it kind of feels like everybody recognizes that this is an untenable situation and the Jets are going to have to part company at some point. To me, it just puts an organization in a position where they lose a little bit of the leverage that they might otherwise have if a team were to pick up the phone and call them and have interest in Jamal. Kind of like what we saw from the Dallas Cowboys last year. It was a first-round draft pick that was the starting price, but the Jets wanted a whole lot more. I don't know if they're necessarily going to get more than that after all of these reports have come out throughout the offseason.
Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, lead us off in the 11 o'clock hour. You're on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. Glad everybody's healthy and safe right now. Yeah, you know what? It is leaning more and more towards that Adams will not be part of the Jets. And once again, listen, I would love to have him for the right price. You know, great player, really good safety, best in the game. But, you know, we discussed it Friday. There comes a breaking point, and they have to come to an agreement. You know, I quite frankly, Eddie Jackson got about 14.5 to 15 guaranteed last year. So if the Jets are willing to pay 15 to 16, you know, an average per year, I would go that much for a guy like Adams. If he's looking 17, 18, 19, I got to get the picks. And at this point, I think teams know what the situation is. And I think if Douglas could walk away with a first and a third this year, I think the deal will get done.
I don't think it's a bad thing for the Jets. I really don't. We've talked about this a lot. You can get, you know, a first and a third or a first and a fourth, and it's a mid-round first, I don't think that's the end of the world, Rick. I don't think that's unfair value for this guy.
No, I don't think it's unfair value. Here's the thing, though, Ira. I don't think it's unfair value, and I understand what you're saying. I just think the disappointing thing for me as a Jets fan is that, I mean, this was a pick that you hit on, and the fact that your best player – well, right now, your best player. I mean, CJ Mosley played one game last year. He played three quarters. So, I mean, your best player right now, your most impactful player, you know, doesn't really feel like or doesn't trust that he's going to be a part of a winning team by staying here with the Jets. Like, you're going to have to overpay him to change his mind as opposed to, you know, he's all in feeling like, you know, I'm going to sign this deal and I'm going to have, you know, plenty of opportunities to compete for a championship.
And, you know, it's funny because if you go back to, like, somewhere between 2001 and 2006, they had the same situations with Curtis Martin and Corbett and there were one or two other, you know, star players that the Jets did reward with extensions and extra contracts. But that they were already – that team was winning. Yeah, remember, from 98 to 2000 – sorry, to Rex's 010 team, they were in the playoffs six, seven times. They made some nice runs. They went to three title games. They didn't get over the hurdle. They didn't get to the Super Bowl, but they were one of the better teams. Maybe Adams is looking at the situation is, you want me to stay, and this is a rebuilding organization. You have to overpay. And if the Jets aren't willing to do it, I guess you just have to move on, and you got cut bait.
Well, I mean, I can't blame the guy for having that kind of attitude. Jamal Adams has done more losing here with the Jets than he has at any level of football he's ever played. So, I mean, this is new for him to be in this situation, but I don't think this situation is too far gone where fresh cash can't fix the ill feelings between the two sides. I mean, if they decide that they're going to make Jamal the highest paid safety, giving him $16 million in average annual value on a contract extension and somewhere in the ballpark of $40 to $45 million in guaranteed money, I think Jamal Adams would be happy to sign up to be the company man for the Jets on the defensive side of the ball for the foreseeable future. It's just a question of whether or not Joe Douglas and Adam Gase have the same urgency that Jamal has in terms of him getting that new deal. And it doesn't feel like that's where they're at right now. That could change.
But Ira, here's the other thing, though, too. I mean, we went through this with Darrell Revis. How long does that fresh cash last before he's back at the table? You know what I mean? Like, if all of a sudden you don't have the winning to support, you know, him staying here, how much, you know, how long does that last? How long does he stay happy? Because let's not forget, I mean, when they started off the season, as poorly as they started off the season, I mean, some of his post-game interviews, this isn't who I am, I'm not a loser, like kind of separated himself from the rest of the team a little bit.
Absolutely, and that's why the Jets probably are hesitant right now to make that commitment. Once again, I have no idea what Adams' asking price is. I'm guessing it's in that $17 to $18 million range.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. But once again, now next year, 2021, I think the cap goes over $200 million. So you could probably fit it in. But the bottom line is, you know, I $16 million deal gets done. 17, 18, 19, you know, if I could get picks, I think the smart business move would be to get the picks.
All right, Ira, we appreciate the phone call. We'll see. Again, I would be surprised if we don't have a resolution to us to this soon. Now, Rich thinks that this could play out to 2021, which, Rick, for me, would be the worst thing for the Jets. We've seen what he's capable of doing. We see how good he is. We also see the other side where when he's unhappy, you know how unhappy he is. Could you imagine if you don't pay him for this season and you let it ride out for another full year?
Well, he's a pro. I mean, he's going to go out on the field and perform because it's in his best interest to have a great season. I think you could get through it if you were winning games to appease him with winning. But if, I mean, you end up, you know, getting into a situation where you're losing football games, yeah, it would be a disaster. The other thing, too, to take into account is the fact that there was flirtation last year and the one team was the Dallas Cowboys. He's from that area. So, if, I mean, that would be tough to get out of your mind, right? Like when you're weighing your options.
Of course.
Already knowing that Dallas, I mean, a team that I'm sure he'd love to play for would be the team that may be trading for him. Like if that was the option, right? Like if you're sitting here going, okay, either I stay here, I'm not going to get the exact amount of money I want, or I could get traded and the team that's going to trade for me is the team I've always wanted to play for and they're going to pay me. I mean, that would be tough to get out of your mind.
Yeah, and that's where I'm from.
Yeah, I mean that would be my thinking is, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, I'm all in my feelings because last year they picked up the phone and on the other end of that phone was the Dallas Cowboys and that's the team that I grew up wanting to play for. I mean, you tell me. I mean, put Dave Rothenberg in that situation. Is that, I mean, either I get paid here.
I'd want to go to my team. Well, so think about this. The checklist. I get to go to the team that I love. I get to go where I grew up and I'm going to get paid and not have to worry about that dragging on with my current team. And I'm going to have a much better chance of winning. I mean, where would anybody rather go?
Jamal would clearly rather go to Dallas because Dallas is closer to competing for a championship. But I think Jamal getting paid is as much about respect as it is anything else. And after the Jets and Joe Douglas and Adam Gase floated him out there, you know, in trade talks, I mean, he felt disrespected. It was clear that he was emotional about it. I mean, he went on local radio stations and let that be known. So, I mean, I think for Jamal, it comes down to how much do you respect me, what I bring to the table, not only what I do on the football field, but what I do in the locker room in the community. If you do respect me, then go ahead and pay me as such. But if you don't, why don't you trade me to somebody that does respect me? Because he knows if he does get traded, all of a sudden he has leverage to be able to get the contract that he's looking for, and he's probably got a better chance at being in a winning program.
Yeah, I just don't think, I guess my point on it is that if you're Jamal Adams, is, you know, why even be reasonable with your contract demands? Like if the fallback is I get traded, most likely to the Cowboys and they'll pay me, I'm going to ask for $18 million bucks a year.
Right.
Like I now all of a sudden I have the leverage because it's either I'll be disgruntled or you pay me this amount of money. And if you don't pay me this amount of money, then, you know, I get to go to a team that's closer to winning a championship. I'll get paid and I get to play for the team that I grew up, you know, watching.
But I guess The big question the Jets need to ask is how much is the disruption worth playing it like this or having this kind of approach with Jamal? Like how detrimental does Jamal being disgruntled, how much does that play into what this team is going to be in 2020? Because I think that's what the general manager has to think about. That's the part of this that not everybody is talking about because you recognize Jamal is a leader in that locker room. You don't want one of the leaders of your team to feel a way about your head coach and the organization as a whole. Like if you're going to introduce him to that locker room, if he's going to continue to be in the building, then you need him to buy into what you're trying to build. And if he's not, then I think that could be one of those things where you look at it and you don't want him to detract from what Adam Gase is trying to do this upcoming season. So I look at this situation with a little more urgency than what Rich is talking about and a lot of people are speculating just because I recognize, you know, how Jamal is viewed amongst his peers in that locker room.
Let's go to Chris in Jersey. Chris, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call so quickly. You know, I just wanted to give, like, a fan's perspective, and I'm going to pull Chris's career into this, too. I'm a Cowboy fan, and I'm convinced if there wasn't a salary cap, Chris would have spent his entire career in Dallas because Jerry would have paid him. He just couldn't because of the cap. And I think you look at Jamal Adams, and it's the same situation, in my opinion. I think that just they would have no problem paying him, but it's the cap implications that kill him. That's why, as a fan, I really hate the cap. It's just,
yeah, but I don't know, Chris. I don't understand. Of course, the cap is a huge factor. I mean,
right, but that's why I said that's what I'm talking about. I don't like the cap. I mean, it's just it to me in football. It's,
but the owners do.
Some owners do. Some the owners of Cincinnati do. You know, a lot of these guys they're printing money and they're billionaires to begin with. So you know, I don't. They should at least expand the cap, you know, so that the players can get what they need, the owners still get what they need. And, you know, like Chris, I mean, I watched you for 3-4 years with the Cowboys, and you came out of college and you had the injury, and you turned into a great player. And then I had to watch the Giants, who I hate. I don't want you in a Super Bowl with them. That's part of the game. That's why you kind of like those feelings. I know as a fan, the pain sometimes goes along with the, you know, the thrill of victory. But it's tough to watch a guy develop and then boom, you leave him. And I know Jamal might wind up a Cowboy, which would be great, but I kind of sympathize with Jet fans. He's your most talented player, in my opinion, at this point. And you're just going to, you develop him and now he's gone. And hopefully the picks you get are going to be, you know, turn into equal value and you really don't have any. You know, there's no guarantee that's going to happen. So, you know, I think if you polled most fans, they tell you that the cap is not something that they really are big fans of.
Well, I think the cap is in place because they want to maintain competitive balance and the owners want to know what the player costs are going to be in any given year. You know what I mean? I think that's why they don't want to have, you know, a sport where they don't have the salary cap because the smaller market teams can't control cost and thereby can't guarantee the profit margin. So I just think that's where it comes into play. But as far as team building goes, I mean, Chris is absolutely right. You drafted and developed Jamal Adams, one of the few draft picks that you've had this entire decade that's actually panned out to the draft billing. So why would you be in a hurry to get rid of that guy as opposed to pay him according to where he stacks up at the best at his position? That, to me, is one of those things where it's hard to square that circle just because the Jets don't have too many homegrown guys that have developed and have turned into an impact guy like Jamal is.
Well, I'll tell you two reasons why you wouldn't pay him. A, it's a lot of money, and we've talked about the position of safety, right? Do you want to pay that much money for that position? And two, this is not the guy that Douglas and Gase brought in. It's not their guy. So those two reasons might factor into why the Jets go ahead and trade him. I think if it's still Maccagnan, I think that he probably gets a long-term deal. But there are other, you know, pieces in play here.
Yeah, and also I think you got to take into account how long is, if you don't pay Jamal Adams this season, how long is Jamal Adams going to be around as a New York Jet? Like, what's the benefit of keeping an unhappy Jamal Adams for this upcoming season if you feel like, first, it's probably going to cost you more. I mean, if he has the same kind of season as he had this year and he's all pro again, it's going to cost you more money, right? It's going to cost you more money.
Of course.
So, I mean, what's in your best interest? Is it to now all of a sudden, you know, take this year's first-round draft pick or whatever it ends up being as compensation and use that to fill some holes in your team, or keep Jamal, don't pay him, let him play out this season, he'll have a great season. We all expect to have a great season. How does that translate into wins and losses? Like, you can't – I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. Like, it makes you a better defense, but you get in the same situation next year where all of a sudden now you still don't want to pay him that much money because it's going to be more money, and now you got to answer the phone and try to trade him next year.
I mean, Jamal is the best player on defense, and your defense was a top 10 unit, and your offense was the worst in football, and you won 7 games. So to me, keeping Jamal Adams around does translate to your team having a better chance at success for the upcoming year, and that's an important year for your head coach because there's a lot of pressure on him to have this team in playoff contention. But in looking at it, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of money to pay a safety. But there's nothing wrong with giving Jamal Adams an extension if he's a guy that you drafted 6th overall 3 years ago and has turned into the best player at his position. For me, it's about being able to add talent to your team, not get rid of it, especially where the Jets are at with their young quarterback. So moving Jamal Adams from the standpoint of trying to team build doesn't make a whole lot of sense from where I sit.
Today on ESPN Daily, this NFL draft is going to look like nothing we've seen before, but some things never change, like ESPN's Mel Kiper and his definitive draft picks. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Now, would you like to know the different ways you can consume the draft? You can listen to it right here on 98.7 ESPN. You can watch it on ESPN and the NFL Network. We're combining coverage with them. Or you can watch it on ABC. Rick, would you like to know the host, the analyst, the contributors to each so you can make an informed decision of where you'd like to watch it?
I want to know everything there is about the draft.
Okay. The commentators, Chris, on ESPN and the NFL Network, Trey Wingo, of course, from Golic and Wingo fame, will be the host on ESPN and the NFL Network. The analyst that he'll be working with, and it's a cast of many, Mel Kiper Jr., Louis Riddick, Booger McFarland, Rich Eisen, Daniel Jeremiah, Michael Irvin, who's sweating already in preparation for the draft, and Kurt Warner. Those are the analysts on ESPN and the NFL Network. An additional contributor is the wonderful Susie Kolber. She's going to interview the NFL draftees and, of course, senior NFL insiders Chris Mortensen and Adam Schefter. That's quite the menu you've got there, Chris. Quite the menu.
No, it's an impressive cast, man. ESPN is going to have you all covered, and we got a couple of guys from the NFL Network coming over. So it'll be great to hear Daniel Jeremiah and Kurt Warner and Michael Irvin interact with the normal guys that we see on the ESPN draft broadcast. So it should be good, man. I'm excited about it.
No, it's going to be great. Now, Rick, the ABC host will be threefold. Reese Davis, Jesse Palmer, and Maria Taylor, the analyst, the great Todd McShay, along with Kirk Herbstreit, Desmond Howard, and David Pollack, and additional contributors, and of course, the music comes along with him, and that is Tom Rinaldi. So either direction you go in, I think you're going to be in very good standing.
Yeah, and it sounds like, too, the ABC telecast is going to focus more on each of the prospects.
So like an in-depth dive into what makes them tick and who they are and behind-the-scenes stuff?
Yeah, you're kind of looking at what we've been kind of mentioning. You'll get more of a feel of these guys heading into the draft, which I like.
I like it. I can't wait for Thursday.
Yeah, give you something to look forward to, get you through the week.
Yep. Yeah, Thursday. So what do you got? You got one round Thursday, 2-3 Friday, 4-7 Saturday, right? That's the way they play it, Chris?
That is how they do it, David.
Nice. Nice. I can't wait for Thursday night. I mean, we haven't had real sports, like something really to sink our teeth into in well more than a month at this point.
Dave, right now, what's your confidence that Dave Gettleman is going to make the right move at 4? Where's your confidence level at? I know you don't like to go percentage, but...
Yeah, no. I can't tell you I have tremendous confidence, but, I mean, he's in such a good position. You're 4th overall, and you don't really need a quarterback, so I can't imagine that we're going to turn the mics on Friday morning and I'm going to be miserable about what the Giants have done. I think that they'll probably go offensive line. That's what I've heard lately, is that they're leaning offensive line. Ideally for me, and I've mentioned this for months, you'd move back a little bit and grab the offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris, I gotta believe that they're gonna do well on Thursday. If you can't do well on Thursday night, then you really have no hope.
No, you're absolutely right. But I will say this, man, and give Dave Gettleman credit. The first draft picks that he's had in each of those classes has been a good pick. I mean, he went with Saquon Barkley. He went with the running back when we all thought he shouldn't, but Saquon Barkley's been a productive player. And then you saw what Daniel Jones was capable of last year. It makes you feel like you have your guy for the next dozen years at quarterback. So, I mean, I guess as it pertains to Thursday, we should have confidence because based on the last couple of drafts, Dave Gettleman with the first pick has done well.
But if you don't do well with the fourth overall selection, what good are you?
I mean, you say that, Dave, but you have draft busts in the top five all the time. All the time. I mean, look at my draft class. I mean, outside of Alex Smith, all of those guys, you would probably classify them as busts. Ronnie Brown, Braylon Edwards, Cedric Benson, Cadillac Williams. You tell me the guy that you feel like was a good value at that pick.
And then nobody.
Exactly. So it happens
Williamson
all the time.
Was in there too, right? I mean, you had to go down to number 8 to get to another guy that had a successful NFL career in Antrell Roll, I think, right?
No, Pac-Man Jones at 6.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it happens all the time. We talk about the draft being the ultimate crapshoot. You know, half the first round picks are busts. Half of them are missed. That's just what it is. So, I mean, if you're a team, especially under these circumstances, you are trying to guard against the downside of where you're selecting a guy. And for the Giants, it would make more sense if they trade back because it does feel like they have a couple of different options at the position of need, the position that we all feel like they should go in, which is offensive tackle.
Or take another quarterback and run a lot of two quarterback sets, Rick. I mean, that's always a nice option.
Yeah, but I would take that as a, I mean, I would take, if I was a Giants fan, I would take that report as a positive. Because, I mean, one of the things, and you keep saying this, your best scenario for the Giants is that they trade back, not too far back, because you still want an impact player, but, you know, to accumulate more picks to get a lot of holes. I would take that report that they're looking into Justin Herbert as a positive thing, that Gettleman is serious about moving back because he's never done it before.
I hope so.
But why else would you?
He had a conference call Friday, and he said, you know, the plan is to really, you know, inquire about moving back. I think they would like to if they have the opportunity to.
Well, it's one thing when you say you'd like to, and then you look at his history, and he's never done it. But now the fact that you all of a sudden have, you know, people that we trust leaking reports, the Giants have exhausted, you know, have done, you know, all sorts of due diligence on Justin Herbert. Like the fact that leaks out when we all realize that's ridiculous. They just drafted Daniel Jones with the 6th overall pick and he had a good season. That would lead me to believe that he's serious about moving back and would like someone to come up to 4. The only problem is that if you're going to come up to 4, why wouldn't you just go up to 3?
Yeah, no, I mean, if you could get to 3 and get that quarterback, then you don't have to worry about what's going to happen. You know, somebody else is going to jump you. I don't know. Listen, this is a great chess game. It's going to be very interesting come Thursday night. Let's go back to the phones. Let's bring in Nick in Brentwood. Nick, you're up next on 98.7.
Hey, how are you guys? Hey, Rick. Hey, Dave. Hey, Chris.
What's going on, bud?
Hey, I'm a security guard. I work at our Northwell Health Center in Bayshore. Listening to you guys gets me and my coworkers through our days. Truly thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thanks, Nick. It's nice to hear those stories, so we appreciate you calling up with them.
A quick condolences to my high school coach who passed away this weekend from COVID complications, Coach Tony Carter from Wauwatosa.
That's awful. Yeah, no, I mean, unfortunately, we're having way too much of that right now.
And so I just want to talk about The Last Dance. I saw it last night, and missed sports this time due to Corona. Like, I got to say, like, it really fulfilled what I was looking for. And, like, in such ways that I never knew, like, off-the-court issues. It's just a like, I'm excited to see the rest. But I also, like, I'm not excited to see the rest because he's going to torture the Knicks and the rest of it.
Well, the whole thing is I mean, it's like a torture highlight reel, thanks to the call, Nick. That's what it is. It's like, yeah, Michael Jordan was the greatest, and every step of the way, everything he did, he tortured Knicks fans and specifically me. Yeah, that's what you have to know you're going to endure for the remaining 8 episodes. You laugh. It's not funny, though. I'm not kidding. Like, there's no way you can be a Knicks fan and have watched last night and plan to watch the next 8 episodes, Rick, and be like, oh, this is just wonderful and entertaining stuff. There's no way that you don't feel some kind of pain as you watch this thing.
Yeah, you feel pain, but that's not the reason why you're not watching, you know, 10 episodes to torture yourself. I mean, you're watching 10 episodes to get an idea of, you know, what it was like. I mean, the other thing I took away from watching that last night is, I mean, there was an element of mystery to Michael Jordan, wasn't it? Like he was always, you know, so cool, but you didn't really know outside of him on the court, you know, what he was up to. Like, you never really got in depth with him. So it's like the first opportunity to really kind of get a chance to see, like, the real Michael Jordan. That's why I think you brought up the swearing, was you actually thought it added to it.
I think it did. Did you see how this actually came about, by the way, the documentary getting done?
Yeah, it was because everybody realized that that was going to be the last time Phil Jackson was coaching the team, and Jordan had let it be known at that point that if Phil walked away, he was walking away. So they granted unprecedented media access so they could document that last season where you had Jordan and Phil together with the Bulls.
Right, but it was on ice forever.
Yeah.
I mean, it was on ice for you know, almost 20 years. And then finally, LeBron came back, and Ramona Shelburne tweeted this. I thought it was so interesting on Friday. LeBron came back from that 3-1 deficit, and everyone was saying, oh my God, he's the greatest. He's unbelievable. And Michael, who had complete control over the video, right? Michael had complete control over it and had to give his go ahead, came out and said, you know what? Go ahead. Make the documentary now. Like almost for the next generation to see how dominant he was for those people that never saw him and didn't know how great, in fact, he was. Well, now you can. Go ahead. Make a 10-part series and let's see how great I was.
You know, Jordan was probably keeping it in the chamber for Kobe, but he realized that he was going to have to wait until, you know, everybody started comparing LeBron James to him, because we would probably say LeBron is closer to Michael Jordan in the pantheon of pro basketball players than Kobe is, right?
I have LeBron higher than
I do too.
Than Kobe. Yes.
I do too, and I'm a Lakers fan. So I mean, I guess that's really what it's going to come to, is the comparisons between LeBron and Michael. And although a lot of people are saying LeBron James can do more than Michael did at a higher level, in terms of competitive greatness, there was nobody that's played the game of basketball that was better than Michael Jordan.
Yeah, just a quick reminder. I mean, you know, especially today's generation, I mean, you have to see it to believe it. And a lot of people haven't seen it. So now it gives you the opportunity for 10 episodes to actually get to see how good Michael Jordan was.
Yeah. And 2 episodes in, you already see. It didn't take long. And some of the things, you know, just, I didn't remember the 49 points. Like, you do learn a lot as you watch this. I didn't realize how unliked Jerry Krause was. I remember that Pippen wasn't treated well, but I didn't remember it was so poorly. Like, Rick, they just didn't treat Scottie Pippen well at all.
Well, he signed the worst deal. I mean, that could be the worst.
Terrible.
You talk about teams, you know, teams giving out bad deals. To him to sign that deal was, I mean, it was 7 years, $18 million deal.
Oh, my God.
When the owner horrendous. Thinks it's not in the player's best interest to sign right. the deal, it's probably not a good deal for the
probably
player.
Probably not. Let's go to our buddy Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're next up on 98.7. Good morning, bud.
Good afternoon. Good morning, my friends, and I hope you're healthy and had a good weekend. It's good to have you back. I have good news and bad news on The Last Dance. What would my three friends like to hear first?
I always like to get the bad news out of the way.
The bad news, it was like a retrospective on how happy my ex-wife is. That's
you're funny.
That's what I watched. Now, I remembered, you know, it's a testing of your memory. We all relived it. I happen to remember every dribble this guy took. To me, he's the best player ever. LeBron's in the same room, though. That's the way I look at it. Now, we're taking bigs out of this. You have to take bigs. You guys are not old enough to remember. I mean, you read about it and you watch film, but, you know, Kareem and Wilt and Bill Russell. It's a separate total category. You just can't compare it. I just thought it was very well done. Pippen signed the long deal, and you have to remember, he came from a big family. They were very poor. The family suffered some big losses. I don't blame him for that. And by the way, whoever's a Motown guy, I don't know if you are, Chris, or you are, Rick, or Dave, but Scottie Pippen's voice, I always know it was deep. But Melvin Franklin of the Temptations has the deepest voice besides Scottie Pippen, if you know who he is. So it's just, it was good, but it was painful as a Knicks fan to watch that. This guy was smooth as a hot knife going through butter. He was just so slick and so smooth. The one that bothered me, Dave, was the one that bothered you, was the Georgetown game.
Oh, I'll never get over that.
Yeah, they rotated the ball. It was perfectly played. They had Worthy on the team, who was the best player on the team for, what they say, 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Look, the old joke, the one to stop Jordan is Dean Smith. Michael Jordan is just generationally great, and he usurps all the generations in a lot of people's eyes. The young kids, your kids, Dave, I guess it wouldn't even be. I guess you guys would be Kobe guys. You're in, Dave, you're 40. Well, you guys are about the same range of age, within 10 years. So probably Kobe, but you saw Michael. You probably saw Michael as little boys, correct?
I saw Michael the whole way through. I was 9 years old when he hit the shot against Georgetown, and I was 12 years old when he came to the NBA. So, I mean, I witnessed every painful moment of Michael Jordan in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Pippen, I don't blame Pippen. Krause always was. I don't like it when they make fun of people, how they look, and how, you know, sometimes you're predisposed to have, you know, you're built like that. That's just the way it is. I didn't like that part. That bothered me. It bothered me at the time. I knew Jerry Krause was in the baseball game, and Reinsdorf's a Brooklyn guy, and I don't blame Reinsdorf. The guy signed. That was big money. Now, if you look back carefully from when Pippen signed to when his next contract, it was a very long-term deal, that's when the explosion of the contracts came. So it's right place, long time, or however you want to put it. But listen, it was beautifully done.
It was well done.
I saw, you know, you saw an older Larry Bird, and it was Magic and Larry. We all know the histrionics, but Alan Hunt always says this. There's a room at the top called the penthouse, and Michael's in that room alone, and LeBron has now entered that room. And LeBron still has, as you know, Chris, you're a Laker fan, whether they play or not this year. There's more important things to deal with. We know that. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see them. We'd like to see them play this year. I'm not so sure if they go back and however format they do it and they practice and pick it up right away. I'm not so sure the Lakers could beat the Clippers, but that's what.
Yeah, but wouldn't you love to find out? And thanks for the call, Spike. We appreciate it. I'd love to find out. Oh, I would, empty stadium, you know, whatever the case may be. I would love to watch. I would do anything to watch Clippers Lakers best of seven right now.
Yeah, that series is going seven though, isn't it, Dave? Between those two teams.
Yeah, you would think so.
You would think that one would go seven. I mean, I would love to see it too. I mean, the Lakers with LeBron and AD, and then you're talking about all the talent that's on that Clippers team led by Kawhi. That would be an unbelievable Western Conference final series. I think it would be finals, right? It would be Western Conference finals?
Yes. Yeah. If they picked up from where they are right now and didn't play any more games leading into the postseason, yes, that would be the Western Conference finals. All right, guys, in these trying times, of course, it's very important to remember we pull together as a community. Small businesses all over going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. So we're not braving the storm like you, Rick, where we're going in like, you know, Navy SEALs into the supermarkets. We're getting food delivered to us. So we had a delivery, and I don't know whether my wife made the mistake or whether the company that delivers made the mistake, but she ordered a box of 12 Rice Krispie treats because the kids enjoy eating those. So a box of 12 will last, you know, not a week or so. What did they do? 12 boxes of Rice Krispie treats.
Perfect.
So now
you're all set.
We have 144 Rice Krispie treats.
That's perfect. The kids must love that.
Great. So, of course, yesterday we're unloading the groceries, and I'm like, well, who wants a Rice Krispie treat? So we had a little Rice Krispie treat challenge yesterday.
I don't see that. I mean, it's not a negative. I mean, it's probably not the best thing. I mean, we may be looking at some trips to the dentist once we're through this thing. But
probably so. But if you want them and you can't get them, that's because we have all of them.
Well, no, if I want some and you have them, maybe I'll just I swing by. By the estate, maybe just throw some out the.
That's true. Yes, almost like changing on the fly in hockey. You just drive by, slow down a little bit, and I'll peg it right into your car window. But if anybody's out there that's looking for Rice Krispie treats and your place is sold out, it's because my family has all of the Rice Krispie treats. So I apologize for that. So Chris,
selfish.
Yeah, I was like, sure. We have a box of like a vat of Rice Krispie treats. What happened? I didn't order that many. She's convinced that they just do what they want. Because how are you going to fight it? You're not going to. Because then they'll just say, "Well, then we're not going to deliver to you."
Hey, you just take it. You'll like it. Just take it and like it.
Just take it. Thank God it's something we do enjoy. But I don't know that we enjoy that many. Put you on the man versus food challenge with the Rice Krispie treat, though.
I would demolish it. I love Rice Krispie.
How many think you could eat honestly in one sitting? 25.
What is one sitting though? Am I timed?
Yeah, 10 minutes.
10 minutes. How many Rice Krispie treats? How many come in a box?
12.
12 in a box. 10 minutes. I'd probably say I could go at least, I could probably go at least two boxes, I would
say. Two boxes, that's what I figure.
Well, yeah, I think that's boxes. On the low end for you, Rico. I had you at three boxes minimum.
I don't want to oversell. Yeah, 10 minutes is quick.
That's a Rice Krispie treat every, like, you know, 20 seconds.
Yeah, it's 36 Rice Krispie treats. I know how many it is.
You know what the issue, though, is? Here's the one sneaky thing that you don't take into account.
You'd be running into the cabinets at the end of eating 36 Rice Krispies. Yeah,
it's the chewing part. Chewing is really the problem. Can you chew it fast enough?
Yeah, because it's a sticky treat.
Yeah, it's a sticky treat. Then your jaw gets tired.
You're not going to chew them properly. I mean, you're going to chew it to the point where you can swallow it, and then you're going to move on to the next one.
Yeah, no, you're right. But 36 in 10 minutes, I would like to see that challenge.
Listen, I have plenty. When we get back into civilization, if you'd like me to bring them in, we can try the challenge.
The Rice Krispie Challenge.
The Rice Krispie Challenge.
That'd be tough.
You might need those Rice Krispies if the Jets trade Jamal Adams.
I don't know what I'll need.
You might need those. Comfort food.
I've already tried to work it into the weekly meal plan, and I'm getting some resistance. So Cassie asked me yesterday, she's like, what do you feel like, pancakes or do you feel like pizza? I was like, well, that's a tough question. I feel like both. I mean, I would like both. You have all the stuff for pancakes, so I think we're going to lean pancakes. But how about, just to get us through the week, since there's no football Sundays, now we have football Thursday because it's the first round of the NFL draft. If I push the pizza to the Thursday and now pretend like it's Sunday.
I like it.
Kind of like that.
I like that. But I don't understand why she's so prohibitive. Like, why couldn't you just ordinarily have pancakes in the breakfast time and then pizza at dinner time?
Well, I'll take the blame for that because it's just not, I can't just do like pancakes in the morning. It's like a day long, you know, grazing of the pancakes. So that's more on me. But I figured I could get the best of both worlds. I could get the pancakes on Sunday, the pizza
on
Thursday, and then pancakes again on Sunday.
Yeah,
I'm a little gluttonous, but whatever.
Speaking of Thursday, the NFL draft begins, I don't know if you know this, on Thursday. And 98.7 ESPN is celebrating the return of football with the Draft Challenge. Now, we're going to do this on our own on Thursday as well, but you can participate and you can win. By correctly predicting the results of the first 11 picks, you can win 4 tickets to the Jets home opener, plus the jersey of the Jets' first pick. To enter, text DRAFT, that's DRAFT, to 44202, followed by your picks listed 1 through 11. We'll assign a point for every correct pick and 2 points for a correct Jets and Giants pick. If you think there's going to be a trade, you just use the word trade for that pick, all from your home for the draft, 98.7 ESPN. I can't wait for this. Thursday's going to be...
Could I run something by you quick?
Yeah.
By the both of you? So I was looking for a way, because I get it. Like, it's fun for us to, you know, do our own mock drafts. That's great. Whatever. I think it'd be even more fun if we incorporate the entire station. So all the talent on the station. So hear me out quickly. How about if we do this? Our show does a mock draft up to pick 11. K-Show, as a unit, Local Meat, Carlin, and then Yin and Yang, Larry and Hop Bayless. It's Skip's brother, Hop Bayless. Yeah.
Gordon doesn't even like the draft, he said.
He's not even going to watch it.
He hates the draft, yeah.
How about all the shows do 1 through 11 mock drafts, and then the loser, by points, has to pay for dinner as a station we go to dinner, and the losing team has to pay for dinner.
I'm fine with that.
I'm on board with that.
I think I kind of like that.
Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Team camaraderie, like everyone gets back. You know what I mean? That just
would
be nice.
I'm fine with that. But here's my, and I am totally cool with that, but I really wanted to compete against the two of you as well. So maybe we could do both. We could have a show wager or just a show pick where each of us does our own, and then we combine forces to go up against the other ones.
Well, wouldn't we have to do our own in order to get the one that we feel comfortable submitting as a show?
So we each do our own.
Yeah.
We go out with that.
And then we compare and contrast notes,
together.
And then we come up with our own for the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I love it.
I like that too, because I feel like now all of a sudden – because there's an emphasis on doing our own, we put the extra work in, and now we'll have the three, and then we can come up with our best show, our show draft.
Right, and then, you know what, we're honest guys, so if I'm doing mine, and I'm like, you know what, I think Chris has a little better selection at 9 overall, we go in that direction. Like, I think the three of us, I have no doubt that we would win this, though, by the way.
Yeah, see, I don't know why you have to say stuff like that.
I don't even understand it.
I'm very confident. Because I think if Vegas had their lines on who would win as a show, we would be the probably prohibitive favorites.
You can think it. I don't know if you have to say it.
Well, I can say it. Maybe that's my hot take today.
Maybe it's your hot take. I just don't know why you need to tempt fate like that. I don't know why you can just under-promise.
DiPietro, Kathy, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.